This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Senator Ann Rest is going to join us here in the 5 o'clock hour as Democrat of the Day. But joining us right away to start off the show is Jack Rice. Jack Rice Defense is the best defense attorney in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Go to jackricelaw.com. That's jackricelaw.com. Jack's been covering and reporting a little bit on the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. I have not talked a lot about it, but it obviously there's a lot of people saying there's a lot of implications from this trial. So we had to get Jack to come on, talk about the trial, talk about the verdict, and talk about the repercussions of that. Jack, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
It's ridiculous. But I am happy to come on. You're right. We have not talked about this at all. In fact, this trial went for 6 weeks, and yet, I even come on to talk about other things, Supreme Court stuff, other things around the country. And I've even sort of jokingly said, we're not talking about the Johnny Depp trial. And you like just dismissed me, poo-pooed me. Get off my stage. So it's like, all right. So I'm here, man. Let's go.
Well, maybe considering the court cases we've covered the last few years, we should be happy.
Supreme Court, Supreme Court, whatever. What about Johnny Depp? Yeah, I know.
All right. So for everyone out there, I mean, a lot of people were following this trial, but just a brief little synopsis. What exactly was this trial about?
Oh, please, everybody knows.
All right.
They don't want to say they know. No, but okay, this is really what happens. This couple was married for less than 2 years, and it was tumultuous at best, brutal, in fact. And then what happened was when they divorced, Amber Heard wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post that came out in 2018, where she said that essentially she was the victim of domestic assault. And really, to be specific, what she said, and this was the title, Amber Heard, : I spoke up against sexual violence and faced our culture's wrath. That has to change. That was the title of the op-ed that she wrote. And essentially, because of that, Johnny Depp's response was, I can't take this anymore. And he sued her. And then she countersued him. So he sues for $50 million because he's starting to lose work, a lot of work. Absolutely fired from multiple movies because of the clout of this. She sues in response to his suit for $100 million. There was originally a lawsuit in Great Britain. People may have heard about that. That was actually a libel lawsuit against The Sun, which is a newspaper in Great Britain. Johnny Depp lost that trial. The problem is that trial, what they wrote in The Sun was wife beater. Well, that wife beater label stuck to Johnny Depp. And so what we saw was what would come next, because the lawsuit was against The Sun, not against Amber Heard. Ultimately, they tried this case 6 weeks in Fairfax County, Virginia. I actually used to live in Fairfax County. It's northern Virginia. A lot of people who live there commute into Washington, D.C., work for the feds. And in that case, the reason it ultimately was tried in Fairfax County of any place else it could be is because the Washington Post was the article where it came out.
Okay.
And the printing press and the process of distribution is actually based in Fairfax County. Okay. That's how we got to Fairfax County.
As this evidence was pulled out in the trial, I mean, I tried to stay away. I mean, there was, as you said, a circus along with this. Social media was going crazy about it. There was a meme generator I've never seen before that would talk about what happened every day in the trial. But from, trying to look at it from a news factor, it did seem like as Depp presented his case, I'm not sure if Heard's response in her case were not well presented, or it seemed like it was getting picked apart fairly easily. Is that a good assumption to say as that trial went on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it actually was. But, if I can, And Matt, I really do understand sort of the point you're making. It's like, with everything going on in the world, why did the world grab this case? And what one could say is, they could say, you know what? We slow down for car wrecks.
Yes.
We slow down.
Yes.
We slow down for train crashes, right? And everybody has to gawk. There's a piece of that. There's the celebrity aspect of that. That is another piece, and that can't be discounted. It's Johnny Depp, after all. But there's another piece to this that I think actually is the relevant piece in the end, and what that has to do is with the Me Too movement itself, because ultimately, if you look at what Amber Heard did, is she writes this op-ed and says, essentially, me too, I understand this like you understand this. And the question became, and this has really been a debate rolling across America and the world to some degree, is there are a lot of people, women in particular, who have been targeted and mistreated because they are women. Mm-hmm. That is undeniable. At the same time, the pushback has been that part of what that undeniable piece came out with was, if somebody makes the claim, it's true, full stop. The problem with that approach is that, so that means that if somebody points at somebody else and says, that person abused me, they have no recourse. There's nowhere for them to go. Their careers can be destroyed. They don't get trials. They get nothing else. They're just over. And the question became, is that fair? Is that right? And that, believe it or not, this Me Too movement and the pushback to the Me Too movement really was also underlying this defamation case.
You know, getting and as obviously the case here is, and this is why there's the debate going on, is that the jury for the most part found for Depp, which wasn't that kind of a surprise? I mean, the jury instructions before they went to deliberate were pretty much made it very difficult for Depp to win his case, but yet they came back and pretty much awarded him pretty much what he asked for.
Defamation is an extraordinary claim to make. And to prove, it is incredibly hard. There were three claims on both sides. In the end, the outcome was this. Johnny Depp prevailed on all three claims. Amber Heard actually prevailed on one claim. What Johnny Depp ended up receiving from the jury, because they're the ones in Virginia who decide the amount, was $10 million in compensatory damages, and then $5 million in punitive damages. Now, there is a cap in Virginia of $350,000. So in other words, it turned into $10,350,000. In the Amber Heard case, she won on one count. They awarded her $2 million in compensatory, none in punitive damages. Let me say this unequivocally. Johnny Depp won this trial. Mm-hmm. And there were two trials going on at the same time. There was the jury trial taking place inside that courtroom in Fairfax County. The second trial was the trial in the public's opinion, because it wasn't about getting just the Johnny Depp supporters to support him. He already had those, and there are lots of them. He's never going to get those who will support Amber Heard unequivocally, who will never turn from her. It was those in the middle, and frankly, Hollywood power brokers who could look at this and say, we feel confident that we can hire him now and it won't hurt us as a brand. Mm-hmm. That's what this case was about to Johnny Depp.
The interesting element, and by the way, I do believe the ruling for Heard was not Depp, but one of his lawyers, correct? Had said something?
Well, actually, all three claims that Amber Heard made were made by her lawyers. And in particular, the one claim that the jury bought and they bid on for Amber Heard was the statement that essentially said that Amber Heard, in an effort of a conspiracy just about, worked with her friends and with her PR people and even her lawyers to set up a crime scene. And that's why this was done. It was all manipulated by all of these groups to make sure that she could prove her false allegation against Johnny Depp, which is an extraordinary claim to make because you're actually having to include a whole bunch of people. And I think the jury said, you know what? That's where you went too far. That's where we're going to bite you.
Getting back to your astute point on the Me Too movement, and once again, Jack Rice kind enough to join us to talk about the fallout from the Depp Heard trial. There is an interesting argument there because you're right. There has been one of those things where people have said, you know, if you're accused of something in under the Me Too movement, that's it. You are that what you are accused of. And on one side, people will say, well, isn't that outrageous? On the other side, I say, well, people aren't accused. I mean, I know a lot of people that aren't accused every day. I mean, I haven't been accused. Patrick hasn't been accused. And my producer, you know, there's a lot of people. It's not like everyone was being vilified. But it does bring up the point about just because you raise your voice, because say you got fired and you come home and you're throwing a temper tantrum, you're upset, you're angry. Does that have the right for someone to label you as constantly screaming at someone? And it generally doesn't. You got to have, I think, a fair definition of it. I don't know if this necessarily hurts the Me Too movement, as opposed to it does set a standard that if you're going to accuse someone of something, by all means, if you've been wrong, please do bring that forward. There are people that are willing to help, but don't have people that really weren't abused trying to turn something into a larger issue just so they can vilify someone else. I think Me Too is still, you know, alive and well, frankly.
Well, it needs to be alive and it needs to be well because it's the truth. It is. Objectively, and you know, I'm embarrassed to put it this way. I had a long conversation with my partner. She and I were talking, and I asked her the question. I says, you know, has this happened to you? And she looked at me like I was growing a second head, and I realized how stupid, how ignorant I was. And she's like, I don't know if I've talked to a woman in my position who hasn't faced this. And I sat there and I had to start thinking about what that meant. And it's the truth. There are so many people that this has happened to. The numbers are staggering. I get the logic of it. And yet, at the same time, how do you find that, dare I say the term, sweet spot? How do you find the balance between saying, this is the truth and there is something systemically wrong here? And there is. How do you balance that side of this with the other side that says, you don't get to destroy people by simply unilaterally pointing one finger and saying, done. Mm-hmm. And it's done. Because we did see a lot of people, certainly in positions of power, media, corporate power, politics, and a bunch of other places, as soon as that finger was pointed, Hollywood too, they were literally done. Mm-hmm. And I think that you have to make sure that if they're deserving of it, so be it. But I think there is that space that says, how do we make sure that when somebody says it, they're actually being fair, they're actually being honest? Because what happens if that person is manipulative and lying and trying to do something to somebody? And if this takes us back to the Johnny Depp Amber Heard case, what the jury determined in this case after 6 weeks of trial was that they did not believe Amber Heard directly. They listened to her words. They listened to her actions. They listened to her movement. They looked at the rest of what was presented to them, and they decided, frankly, that she was a liar. Mm. Now, how do you reconcile Me Too that says it's real, they did it to me, with somebody who's a liar? That is the piece, and that's the tension. That's the conflict that I think that this case really represents and actually matters far beyond Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, because I'm pretty sure neither of them are coming over for dinner tonight.
But it's also, we also have to be careful with the absolutisms, because one thing I took away from this trial is, yeah, Depp was weird. And, you know, he is a weird dude, and it looks like he's somewhat cleaned himself up, which, I mean, if you have a drug problem or something, I'm glad to see you're turning your life around. But while he was married to her, there was a lot of really strange behavior, which then brings up the point that Amber Heard, I mean, people want to look at this and say she's lying about everything. No, I think that there's definitely some smoke there. Whether there's full fire, that's the debate. There clearly seems to have been on both sides a bit of an abusive relationship. And it should not necessarily dismiss or demean Amber Heard per se that she did indeed, you know, have issues. But what this was, if you're going to take those issues and try to basically turn them into much larger problems, you'd better have the evidence to go along with it. Because, I mean, one of the things I thought Depp did very well in this case was he just brought Hollywood on into Virginia and basically, you know, allowed them to kind of, you know, dismantle Heard themselves. And, you know, by the time it was over, I mean, when you see movie stars and celebrities and people in Hollywood, they're basically saying, yeah, this is, you know, they're kind of working against Amber Heard. It really made her case, even if there was some smoke, as I said, maybe not the full fire, it kind of makes people think, oh, she's made up the entire thing. And that's not necessarily right either.
Well, if we think about this, and I thought about that piece of this too, and I think this is the troubling aspect to this. If we go back and we look at what Amber Heard actually wrote, and she wrote this op-ed with the help of the ACLU that went into the Washington Post, what she really said, and I'm condensing this down, is that in a world that's dominated by very powerful men, if you're in a position like this, they will take the full weight of their power and they will surround you and squeeze you into nothing. And they will undercut you and they will destroy you at every level in order to be successful. Isn't that exactly what happened? I mean, isn't that exactly what she did? And what happened is that Johnny Depp brought in very persuasive experts. Johnny Depp brought in some extraordinary people. Johnny Depp and his team were able to cut her to pieces in so many ways because there were aspects of her personality and who she was that were clearly troubled. Well, they took that troubled personality trait and they turned that into doubt. And so you could really make an argument here that said what she wrote was literally a prognostication of what exactly was going to happen to her 4 years later, and it did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can honestly think that you can walk away from this case, as ugly as it is, as celebrity as it was, and you can say, right. Yeah, Johnny Depp didn't necessarily maybe needed to be labeled as he was and see his career destroyed. But Amber Heard didn't exactly come out of nowhere with this. It wasn't like this was, as you said, just, you know, point and scream and that's that. There's something there. And I think at the end of this, we're going to have to, I don't think it's as some people on the right are screaming, it's the end of Me Too. I think it's more of we need to kind of think through how we do this, because we do want to make sure the people that have been abused have the legal ramifications and the outlets to get the help that they need. I don't think that's something we want to try to put into the back into the closet again.
No, I don't think that can really happen. Well, no, you know what?
Yeah.
Here's my problem with that is that I remember reading an article in like the Atlantic years ago before Donald Trump, where they came in and they talked about with the power of the Latino community and the expansion of it, it's going to be very difficult for the Republican Party to ever actually be able to nationally hold on to the kind of power that they did. And they did. Mm-hmm. They just did. It's undeniable. And then you come back and you look at the power of women who collectively and others in support of them who are coming together saying, look at the power when you're talking about 150 million women standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder. And you're like, who can stand up to that? And guess what? Do you see what the Supreme Court just did?
Yeah.
My response is, you know, I want to say that you can't push this movement back into the proverbial closet, but I've seen some pretty terrible things happen. And I think to simply say we're here for good, and whether you like it or not, I don't think you just can assume that. I think there's going to have to be an ongoing, continuing effort by people at all stages to say this world needs to be better. Yeah. And we can't simply sit back and allow and hope it happens. We got to make sure that it does. So that's a part of it, too.
Jack Rice defense. Once again, the best defense lawyer in Minneapolis, St. Paul is Jack Rice. Hands down, end of story. If you have some questions, you've got a case, give him a call, sit down with him. He'll talk about your case and give you honest answers. I can attest to that. Jack Rice defense is jackricelaw.com. That's jackricelaw.com. He is the best defense attorney in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Jack, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, brothers. Always fun.
Take care. Jack Rice, kind enough to join us to talk about that case. But, I mean, he's right. As a matter of fact, he made a point towards the end there. I want to come back after the break. I want to elaborate on, because he is spot on right about one thing in regards to the Supreme Court rulings that are coming down. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. You know, I actually agree wholeheartedly with something that Jack mentioned there, is that when he was talking about we have to make sure that we don't go back. I mean, I was, when Me Too started up. Now, by the way, the Me Too was just that kind of that moment. We have seen kind of an awakening towards this that's been happening even before Me Too, say, started in, say, you know, 2017, 2018, you know, when the first initial, you know, stretches and that started there. I think that women have been, you know, basically it's become undeniable that you can't basically, you know, just dismiss a lot of these allegations. And I think that there have been a lot of really horrible men on this planet who have banked on the ability to say, she's a chickie poo. Who's going to believe her, huh? Oh, she's making up stories to try to get a payday. Oh, I see what's happening. Yeah, and they've been able to manipulate the system for so long. Unfortunately, those are the people who are in power, and they still are in power. I do not think that the fact that the Supreme Court has been stocked now with far right zealots who clearly seem to be there to undermine women's rights in this country on a mass level. I do not think that is a coincidence. I think that the judges that have been appointed to the Supreme Court have been placed there on that Supreme Court to basically undo this Me Too movement. Oh, you're going to finally start holding people accountable? Well, we'll see about that. We'll show you who's really in control. And as I've said, this overturning of Roe v. Wade, it's not about abortion. It's about control, because they're going to go after birth control next and who you can marry next. You know, what kind of sex you have in your own house next. Those are the things. It's about controlling you under the argument of, we're pro-life. Now get in there. We're going to chain you to the bed and make you have a baby because we're pro-life. That sort of thing. And by the way, not too far away from some of the introduced bills the Republicans, and especially in some of the southern states, have put forward. I think that there is a direct correlation. And what is happening is this, and I will say this until my dying day. The Republicans know left outrage only lasts a little while. And so they're very good at biding their time. They know a lot of people outraged over this stuff will not show up in November. Oh man, you want me to go vote? I don't wanna. Same people who are 4 months earlier saying, stay out of my ovaries. All of a sudden, they're too busy to choose who's going to lead them in their country. They already know this. So they're just basically twiddling their thumbs. And same thing for gun violence. Same thing for health care. They just twiddle their thumbs, wait their time. They know eventually they'll have another great year like 2010. And they'll take control of everything. And for 2 years, they will implant. Well, in 2010, they were able to redistrict across the country. And they know that eventually they'll get that time again, and they will put in there even more draconian laws because they know leftist outrage has a limit. So if you really want to change the world, you want to have a march, fine, knock yourself out. You want to build a, make a sign, great, do a meme online, great. That's not going to do anything outside of basically give you an outlet. If you really want to change things, the only damn thing that matters is getting off your asses and voting, for God's sakes. Every single election, that is the only thing that will change. Because I can tell you one thing, every Republican will show up to vote in 2022. They could have Hitler himself on the ballot, and he'll still get every Republican vote. Well, we could probably go down the line. Well, never mind. You want to change things. Show up in 2022. Show up in 2024. Show up in 2026. Show up in 2028. And then the white guys who are sitting biding their time will finally stop being there. And then you can make real change. But unless your outrage is boiling hot all the time, running through those election cycles, then this is all a moot point because they are just waiting for you to, oh, look, there's something new on Netflix. You better watch that and not vote. Oh, no, here's this really great meme. Did you see the video of the puppy dog? Oh, you got to see that. Oh, you forgot to vote. Oh, boo-hoo. They are very patient. And they're just waiting for your outrage to wane. So, it's just that simple. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. Apparently, the station is haunted. No one sends me a memo on this stuff, man. We'll talk to Patrick here about what the heck he's talking about in just a moment. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show.
Hey, boy. What you say, boy?
952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So what was this about? We're haunted. Is the radio station haunted here?
Oh, well, that's up for debate if you don't believe in such things. Brett and I just found it was really weird. We found a computer file that neither of us had remembered moving, nor had a reason to move that had been moved on the computer desktop. And I could sit here and I could tell another story from when I came in on a Saturday morning early on in my time here. But
So now don't tease us. What happened on that one? Was there like a ghost, a spirit, a headless specter? What? Or was it just you heard a noise?
Well, I came in that it was a Saturday morning. I came in and the board had gotten kind of messed up in the time that since I had come in the previous evening, where some of the sliders and buttons had been moved into the position that would suggest somebody had been running a show.
Oh, had it? Well, it could, you know, it could be numerous things there. I'm not saying that things couldn't be moving around.
Well, no, I'm not saying, oh my goodness, it was a ghost. I'm just saying that was my...
I'm just glad you're saying when you said that the control board in there, it wasn't like covered with slime or anything. Because I can tell you, I can peg two or three people that could be at the station. I'm just going to let you know they've got issues. They're popular with the ladies, but I mean it's just I don't think that was the case. First of all, I will say this: as far as things go, I've got here an iPhone. This is supposed to be the iPhones are supposed to be crack top of the line technology, right? The thing screws up. I've had to restart this thing like four times, you know, in the like last week because it keeps goofing up. If we go with the technology, every time technology screws up something, it's a ghost. Man, dude, I got more ghosts. I will say that. Now, I find the other story a little more compelling. But, I mean, do we know of anyone died here? I mean, is there a radio host from years ago that was, hey, here is Crosby, Stills, Nash, and, you know, down he goes. Is that, do we have that?
I would have to find out more about the history of the facility.
There used to be the WAYL here, didn't it? When, you know, the old whale had that. They never had the whale float at all the parades and everything in town. I don't know. I mean, if it smells like dope, it smells like fast food, and is basically, you know, swearing a lot, it could be the ghost of a radio host. So I, you know, not, especially 1970s. Holy God, those guys smoked dope like crazy. There have been one or two times in my life, and I've said this as we've talked about, we need to get Bakken in here. Get Greg in here. Get Bakken in here, as his show, of course, deals with the supernatural and the, you know, spirits here. Maybe has he had any experiences here?
I have not asked him directly, but I'm sure if I did, the next time I see him, he'd probably say what he's noticed around here.
We might have a shamed intern around here somewhere, like crying in the corner. I don't want to go do this event. Got to go do this event. And then, you know, they died, and that's where their experience has been. Get Bakken in here. Of course, his show is on the weekends. When is Greg Bakken's show on?
4 p.m. Sunday afternoon.
Get Greg out in here and tell him, do you have the spectrometer? When are we going to get those cool Ghostbuster detecting ghost things, by the way? And don't give me this stuff like, you know, the voice recollect. No, don't give me that stuff. No, give me the stuff like Egon has in Ghostbusters, where it's like, ah, there's a ghost right there. You know, there you go. I don't think the station's haunted. I think it's more a little dirty. But we're all dirty here. Hi there. Ghost of a demented radio host right there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hey, let me get to a few things here that are just humdingers for the Republican Party, because, you know, as you can imagine, oh, the Republicans, they're looking, they're so hopeful that things are going to look great for them. And then they've got, let's start with Kim Crockett. You know, that Kim Crockett, the anti-Semitic video, the anti-Jewish video that she played at the GOP convention to rousing applause at the GOP convention. And when the Jewish population was like, hey, what the hell was that? All of a sudden, like, what? You mean that bigoted trope for the last few hundred years? We had no idea. Yeah, that Kim Crockett, who wants to be the Secretary of State. Ugh. Kind of interesting. When you become an endorsed GOP candidate, and reminder, the woman who ran the anti-Semitic video at the Minnesota GOP convention is the GOP-endorsed candidate for Secretary of State. Just remember that, kids. When you become an endorsed candidate for a political party, generally the concept is to support the rest of the political party, so that you would, if you're out there, you're going to, as the Republican candidate for the Secretary of State, you'd back up, say, Dr. Scott Jensen, who's the Republican endorsed candidate for the governor, or say Jim Schultz, who's the Republican candidate for the Minnesota Attorney General's position. Reminder, don't believe he's actually spent a minute in a Minnesota courtroom. I don't believe that's true. So, but he wants to run the state's law side. Okie doke. Didn't he say something about making women who get an abortion a criminal act? Didn't he say something like that of prosecuting women? Oh, yeah. Great slate you got there. Anyway, but Jim is the Attorney General candidate there. Doug Wardlow did not win the Republican nomination at the convention. Did not. But he has decided he is going to take it to the primary to try to beat Jim Schultz as the Attorney General. And I think, once again, I think he's got a legit chance. I talked about this, was it yesterday? As I was talking about, yeah, it's a legit chance. He sees exactly who is in the Republican Party. And, you're not going to outright wing Doug Wardlow. So there's going to be an event on June 14th. Save the date. is election fraud real? Actually, I can save the, you don't have to go to the date. No, it's not in the ways that you guys say it is. I mean, a lot of Republicans seem to be trying to vote twice and doing stuff like that, but that's not as you're implying. But the right here, this is an event sponsored by MN Patriots, Our Savior's Lutheran Church in Zumbrota, which, by the way, should tell you everything you need to know about that church. Ugh. They're having is election fraud real rally June 14th, 6 p.m. Doors open, 6:30. The panel begins. The panel includes people like Doug Wardlow, constitutional lawyer, Chuck Scheffler with Alliance Defending Freedom, Mickey Murray, Mickey M-I-K-K-I, ugh, years as head election judge, and also speaking, Kim Crockett, experienced election day attorney. And wait a second, isn't that the same Kim Crockett who ran an anti-Semitic video at the GOP convention and still got the GOP endorsement? Isn't that? Yes, it is. It is indeed the same Kim Crockett appearing together with Doug Wardlow. Ruh-roh. You know, Kim, I'm just going to say this. It's not going to go well for you if Jim Schultz is the attorney general and you're, say, the secretary of state, which, by the way, I know comedy and ain't going to happen. But still, let's just play this out. Say that you were to win and then Jim Schultz is the attorney general and you want him to prosecute some kind of loony aliens are trying to vote in North Minneapolis kind of crap. I don't think he's going to be too receptive after you went and palled around with Doug Wardlow. I'm just going to say, generally at this point, aren't you supporting the rest of the ticket, the endorsed ticket? What a surprise. A faux pas from Kim Crockett, who, by the way, just FYI, I don't know if you've heard this or not, Kim Crockett aired an anti-Semitic video at the Minnesota GOP convention, which got a rousing applause, and then was nominated for the Secretary of State position by the GOP. I don't know if you heard that. I don't know. She's really a horrible human being. Michael Broadcourt putting that out there. Speaking of horrible human beings, Og. That's right. Frankenstein himself, Matt Burke. and by the way, he does. There are some images from him from the convention. The only thing missing in that dude's neck are two bolts. I'm just saying. It's fire bad. Matt Burke, the lieutenant governor candidate under the Dr. Scott Jensen Lollapalooza fest. This is an article from Racket. He's a passionate small business owner. He wants the stifling forces of government off his back. That's right. There is nothing more evil than big government. That's right. That's a standard. Isn't that a standard line from the Republican Party? You feel like the government's against you, says the ex-NFLer and current Republican politician. There's too many regulations, too many taxes. There are enough obstacles to try to get the business off the ground without the government trying to push you down. Oh, that's right. Burke, who earned an estimated $51,498,037 throughout his 15-year football career, elected to have the federal government uplift his motivational speaking consulting biz. What? Matt Burke and Co., LLC, received two fully forgiven Paycheck Protection Program loans totaling $64,000 to help keep his two employees paid during COVID-19. Those employees appear to be Burke and Arkansas businessman Paul Vital. I'm not sure. V-I-T-A-L-E. The LLC is registered to Burke's 11,422 square Mendota Heights mansion. Dude, what do you need with all that space? Your ego? I'm guessing. By the way, the quaint little small mom and pop business. You've got to go to the Racket and see the picture of Burke's house, his mom and pop business that he got. $64,000 from the federal government to help bail out. in the Matthew Lesko sense, Burke is no dummy. The Harvard-educated, well, fire. The Harvard-educated man running to be Scott Jensen's lieutenant governor didn't leave any free money on the table, but for a party that worships the altar of free market capitalism, opting for a handout that appears to be further enrich an already rich man, lousy objects, even if it's legally legal. By the way, Racket did reach out to Jensen's campaign, and they did not hear back. No. I wonder if the first response is, he did what? Burke's PPP wheelings and dealings didn't stop with Matt Burke & Co.'s LLC. Unity High School, the Burnsville's private school Burke launched in 2019 to turn teens into virtuous, clean-thinking Catholics. Received a fully forgiven PPP loan of $19,900. Unity listed five employees, so presumably it's one, four workers not named Burke benefited from that one. So, you know, and once again, I'm going to say this. I'm glad the PPP loans helped you out. But you see, is I'm not the clown car, Burke, sitting there on the side saying, big government bad. Keep big government out of my business. Oh, big government's got free money. Here, let me get a check. Here, right here. Send it to my mansion. My business. Okay, once again, he got a PPP loan for his struggling business located in an 11,422 square foot mansion. How is Matt Burke going to eat tonight? Well, you got plenty of mansion to gnaw down on, I guess. The Paycheck Protection Program was a pretty good deal. I thought it helped out a lot of people. Galling PPP examples are abound. California businessman used his $5 million in aid to buy a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, a Bentley. Shake Shack, the international burger biz that's demonstrably not small, returned its $10 million loan amid backlash. The closest Burke corollary might be the gib-grifting podcaster Mueller, she wrote. Host Allison Gill is wishy-washy on student loan forgiveness, although she was happy to collect $52,157 in forgiven PPP cash to keep her podcast afloat during the boom time for podcasting. Of the 228,000 Minnesota-based PPP loans worth $16.6 billion, 28 businesses have received the maximum amount of $10 million each. That includes the Star Tribune, whose owner happens to be worth $2.4 billion. The Strib took a charitable look at the relief program last month without disclosing its own multi-billion dollar benefit. Among other $10 million local guys, the little guys there, were a few law firms in the state. So, yeah. Now, I remember, don't you remember, what was it, Lions Tap down in Eden Prairie? Put the thing out there saying, we're looking for workers, not people looking for a handout. And then you found out he took a bunch of money from this federal government? Oh, yeah, he couldn't shut his sphincters fast enough, could he? Oh, Matt Burke, struggling business owner. I mean, I could just see him. I'm a struggling business owner as he roams the 11,000 square foot mansion he's got. Like I said, dude, I'm guessing you need it for that head. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hey, I thought the PPP program was great. This is you guys talking about government bad. Can't jam the money in your pockets fast enough, apparently. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. All right. I had a premonition that we fell into a rhythm where the music don't stop. Oh, great. Now we got Matt suggesting we have aliens in the building. Yeah, you know, it's... Well, it could be the remember those guys that flew the spaceship past Mercury a few years back? Yes, might have stuck around. They like what they hear. Before you, dear alien creatures, before you feast on my delicious flesh, make sure you stay back and listen for the entire show. It's a really good show. Okay. Oh, I've been tenderizing. Come on, fellas. Soup's on. Here you go. 952 646-625-952-946-6205. All right. I'll tell you what. Let us get to the Minnesota coronavirus update. Let's do that right now. Now, we do have now the update with a lot of the numbers from this last weekend. The update from Minnesota Department of Health includes 4,813 newly reported cases, 11 reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,649. According to the latest Metropolitan Wastewater data, only 18% of the samples now are BA2. BA2121 is now increased to 71% of all samples. Through June 1st, the number of people with COVID hospitalized was 475. That's actually down from 480 from yesterday. Of those hospitalized, 39 people are in intensive care. That's up from 34. 436 people are non-ICU care. That's down from 446. As of May 31st, the state reported that 3,916,910 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,712,363 have completed the vaccine series. Everyone's up to date and boost and all that on 2,442,215. The official number of people that have gotten COVID, which is once again a gross undercount, 1,513,760, basically a quarter of the state. But once again, that's a gross undercount at this point. After nearly a full year of requiring either proof of vaccination or a negative COVID-19 test to be in attendance of a performance, First Avenue has announced all of its venues will no longer mandate the requirement. On August 2nd, 2021, First Avenue said that all concerts and events at venues would require either proof of full vaccination or proof of a negative COVID-19 test taken within 72 hours. First Avenue also owns the Palace Theater, Fitzgerald, Fine Line, and Turf Club in the Twin Cities. But according to the update site, effective June 1st, concerts and events at First Avenue and associated venues will no longer require proof of COVID-19 vaccination, proof of negative COVID-19 test. However, due to artist requests, some concerts and events could still require proof of vaccination or negative test results. Mask policies will also be instated on the case-by-case basis. Ticket holders are directed to check the individual event page for exact policies and requirements prior to any event. So, buyer beware. Make sure you find out if you're going to be going to, say, you know, see a concert, that you know exactly whether or not you need to have the proof of a COVID shot or a proof of a negative test. Hour two of the show coming up next. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. The Matt McNeil Show. Hour two on your Thursday. Matt and Patrick here. Once again, we're haunted by the decision that we had Taco Bell for lunch. No. We're haunted by the freaking Twins, man. 27 innings, and they got two runs against that stellar pitching staff in Detroit. What in the world was that?
Well, it was not good, but, you know, people are pushing the panic button, and we're still 4.5 games up in first place.
I know we're there, but my God. God, you should be mopping the floor with Detroit.
Well, you know, and I'll just throw out there, the Dodgers just got swept by Pittsburgh.
I'm not
excusing it, but over the course of 162 games, you're going to lose some games to some bad teams.
But if we lose this division by 3 games, we can point back to this Detroit series. They went 1-4 in Detroit. Detroit. And it's not our pitching. It's not our pitching. Our pitching is doing everything to keep us in these games. We had no bats all of a sudden. None.
Yeah, we are pretty injured. We have some guys injured. We have some guys on the COVID list. And, by the way, speaking of that, we're going to find out who doesn't get to go to Toronto here in the next couple hours probably. That's kind of going to be exciting.
Why? Did someone come back onto the roster?
No, because Canada has a vaccine requirement to get in, so we're going to find out who didn't get vaccinated and can't go play the Blue Jays.
That means I will be paying left field for your Minnesota Twins, because we're paying, yeah, whatever. By the way, we're also haunted by ghosts here at this radio station. But I guarantee you the ghosts aren't going to be in here when the results of the Taco Bell finish out. So we're safe. You know, we got precautions going on. 952-946-6205. All right, Patrick. I'm going to start this off by saying I hope they all do okay. But there's unlucky, and then there's, oh my, that's unlucky. You ready for it?
Go ahead.
Three people are fighting for their lives after the hot air balloon they were in was struck by a train in Wisconsin. The incident happened at about 8:15 Wednesday, the 400 block of Calumet Street in Burlington, where local police and fire departments arrived to find three people injured from a hot air balloon. The Burlington Police Department was informed by witnesses that the hot air balloon appeared in distress and collided with a Canadian Northern train that was traveling northbound on the tracks. Has this ever happened before? Hot air balloon versus train.
I gotta say this has to be at least the first one I've heard of.
That is not a fair fight. Wow. According to TMJ, the witnesses said the balloon hit a building and then struck by the train. Two victims were airlifted to a hospital in suburban Milwaukee. The other injured person was taken to the hospital by ambulance, all of them suffering fairly serious injuries. The cause of the crash is under investigation. No further information has been provided. Hot air balloon, I mean, when you take off in the up and away in my beautiful, beautiful balloon, do you even think about yourself as, well, hopefully we don't get hit by a train today?
I'd be more worried about a bird popping the balloon or something.
Or a plane or some, you know, do they do? Okay, so you know, have you been out on the Lake Minnetonka and you've got a boat out there and all of a sudden the knuckleheads with the jet skis come around you like a swarm of idiots that are, you know, tearing around your boat going, dude, dude, yeah, like that. Do guys go up there with like paragliders and stuff like that or drones? Are they zipping around the balloons like that? Dude, is that what it is? I mean, I'm with you. I'm afraid of things in the air because it's a hot air balloon, not a train. Wow. Yeah, that one, caught my attention there. I got good news for people out there that if you're a fan of the little tweets, not Twitter. No one's a fan of that. That's just, you feel icky and it's like you're the floor of a cab. No, I'm talking about birds. Our little bird friends. After warning residents to not feed the birds this spring due to the concerning rise of bird flu cases, the Raptor Center at the University of Minnesota says it's now safe to use feeders as cases fall. Oh. In a Facebook post, the center says the risk of avian flu is low enough that the feeders can once again go up. With the wild cases of bird flu continuing to decline, we are updating our bird feeder recommendations and believe the risk from avian influenza is low enough that feeders can be put out again. Yay! I like birds. Birds are nice. They make noise. So there you go. You can put your bird feeders back out again. Finally, in the lesser news cycles, a Minneapolis man is facing more than a dozen charges of state lottery fraud. Man, you guys can't be this dumb. You guys can't be this dumb. Michael Kenneth Small, 38, is charged with 8 counts of state lottery fraud. A criminal complaint states that two people pulled into the Winner gas station in New Brighton at around 5:15 a.m. on January 20th. It goes on to say one person smashed a window with a wrench, went inside, stole several lottery tickets before the two people left. Since the Minnesota Lottery tracks where each ticket is sold and redeemed, it was immediately able to determine that Small and another man allegedly tried to redeem additional stolen lottery tickets at 7 St. Paul locations on January 20th. The complaint notes that Small was charged in at least 6 cases across 4 counties for redeeming stolen lottery tickets. He's already at the Hennepin County Jail after Minnesota troopers saw him driving a vehicle the wrong way near Interstate 494 in Rockford Lane shortly before 1 a.m. on May 21st. This guy sounds like a winner. Authorities tried to stop him. He fled all the way to Rogers and then turned around and drove the right way back towards the metro area. Eventually, according to the complaint, the vehicle stopped in the back of a home in the 4400 block of 43rd Avenue South in Small, and the passenger went into the home. Officers arrested them after the people in the home said the men weren't allowed in the house. Small faces DWI, burglary, fleeing police charges from that incident, as well as a host of other charges from unrelated cases. And ladies, no. He's set to have a court hearing on June 24th in connection to the wrong way driving and pursuit, but no court date has been set at this time for the lottery fraud charges. A fire at Fort Snelling?
Yeah, this is breaking news. We had a listener just call in to bring it up. It has been circulating a little bit on Bring Me the News and on care11.com. There was a fire at Fort Snelling, building 55 mostly. Has burned, according to the report on Bring Me the News. which was a former gymnasium and service club built in 1903. The fire, according to Care 11, is mostly out, but unfortunately it sounds like one of the buildings has been heavily damaged, but very minimal information so far.
So it sounds like what we're talking about here is not a building on the historic Fort Snelling area, but on the other side of, would that be 55 in Crosstown, where they have the Boy Scout camp and the golf course and everything. That's what it sounds like. Is that a fair assessment, do you know?
That sounds right to me. But like I said, the information is very limited at this point about that.
Okay. So, yeah, not sure what happened there. Yeah, I'm looking at Bring Me the News right now, and that's a It looks like it is not at historic Fort Snelling. At least it doesn't look like it, that's for sure. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Where is that sign? Okay, yeah, this one looks like it's on that other side, kind of where those baseball fields are at. The baseball fields are at, and then there's a line of buildings back over that way. That's where it looks like this fire is burning. So, keep an eye on that by the airport.
Yeah, but that was a listener tip. Thank you for letting us know about that.
By all means, please do. If you have something like that, let Patrick know. You can call us at 952-946-6205. Any word on if this is delaying flights out of MSP?
I have not seen any reports on that, so I would assume for the moment that's not the case. But I will further and follow
up. It's not that big of a fire, but sometimes out of precaution they might be moving runways and stuff. So we'll let you know. We'll keep an eye on that story. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. By the way, if I can say happy Pride Month here to everyone out there. I want you happy. And if that's what, makes you happy, by all means, be happy. We're all human beings. We're all human beings. We're one race, the human race. And if that's who you are, please be that. You've got friends, you've got support. And frankly, I think it's one of the best elements of America today, hands down. There still is, though, an amazing amount of pushback when it comes to LGBTQ+, groups that are trying to make a difference. The latest problem you're having, and once again, I'm going to go back to another theme I've talked about many times on this show. The younger generation, they've had it with our crap. They really have, and they're not taking it anymore. Students at Annandale High School staged a walkout in response to district officials pushing back on LGBTQ+ signs hanging inside the school. The signs in question were created by the school's Gay Straight Alliance, a student group that aims to provide safe and inclusive spaces for those who are looking for support. Now, if you've seen the signs, I believe the story is also from bringmethenews.com. It's basically like a pinwheel rainbow with a cardinal, I'm guessing that's the school mascot, on it. It's not a rainbow flag or anything like that. It's just a pinwheel rainbow to signify that it was, signifying an inclusive space. Wow. Freshman Landon Nelson told Bring Me the News the signs were created months ago to make LGBTQ+ students feel welcome, but said the district leaders called the signs too political. Wow. How broken are you that you see a sign with a rainbow pattern on it and it's a political sign? No, it's not. They're gay or lesbian or trans or bi. This is how they were made. It's not, I can choose to be, a member of the Green Party. I can choose to be someone, a libertarian. I can choose like this. That's politics. This is who they are, and because there are so many freaking creeps out there that see a rainbow logo and immediately start screaming about political signs, these people need to have inclusive, safe spaces. And so they put up signs saying these are inclusive, safe spaces, and here you come, you closed-minded jackasses. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. This is about you, not about us. This is about you being an uptight jackass. It's not about a bunch of kids who just want to get through their teenage years and be accepted for who they are. It's about you being an uptight jerk. Stop it. Pathetic. Nelson says the signs came out of because LGBTQ plus students were experiencing verbal abuse about their sexual orientation or gender. The safe space signs see the high school's mascot logo superimposed over a rainbow background. Nelson said teachers could hang them in their classrooms if they wished, but they were never pressured to do so. These signs made LGBTQ plus students feel safe and welcomed, and they allowed students to know that teachers or staff they could go to when they needed someone to talk with. Nelson claims the superintendent, Tim Prom, told him the signs didn't represent other minorities, such as students in poverty or students with parents going through a divorce, and said the school is looking to remove or replace them. Okay. Other minorities, like people who are poor. Now, first of all, I want to, you know, listen here, knucklehead. More people are living in poverty than they are wealthy. You do understand that. That's not a, just in a pie chart method, it's not a minority of the pie chart. The majority of people are of lower income wages and don't have benefits. But that's about their socioeconomic status, not about minority status. Parents going through divorce. Once again, tragic. You know, I've had friends who've gotten divorced. Some of the kids go through it great. I've had friends who've gotten divorced. The kids have a hard time. Giving them mental health services in the schools would go a long way to help them out. But this is so misguided as a way to try to dismiss this, you know, LGBTQ group. It's insane. He says alternate posters were proposed that would replace the rainbow with the school's colors and replacing words safe space with all are welcome. The school says it did not order the signs be removed, but the district did acknowledge that the attorneys felt the LGBTQ was a political topic and has been seeking more inclusive alternative. About 50 students and community members joined in the walkout on Wednesday, the first day of Pride Month. The group marched with the district office around 12:20 p.m. Nelson claims the walkout ended with the school staff asking those who participated in the walkout to take Pride-related apparel off without any reason. Steve, yeah, you guys are missing this horribly. I mean, this is the reason why they have to have inclusive areas. Steve Sherber, principal at Annandale High School, provided the following statement to the news. During our ongoing discussion with our student GSA group, some students let us know that they intended to conduct a walkout today. The district supports these students' rights under the First Amendment to speak and gather peacefully and safely. The school district supports our GSA students, and we want to continue the dialogue to work with our entire student population so that all students are safe and welcomed. But not that sign. Don't wear that shirt. Yeah, whatever. I'm not saying he's saying that, but I'm just saying, dear Lord, mixed messages at the least. One issue that we have been discussing is the safe space sign. Those signs have not been removed from our schools. We have been discussing more inclusive message for signage in the classroom. Okay, the problem is that you have a group of kids who they themselves are needing a safe space because of the group that they are. You saying, yeah, but, you know, we have to think about the people that are bullying them too, which is kind of what you're saying here, is missing the point of creating the safe space, you knuckleheads. We take any concerns or harassment brought to our attention very seriously. Act promptly to correct the misbehavior. Well, then throw the bullies out of school. We are working with a consulting firm to gain more education and training on equity for our students and staff. The safe space signs have not come down. They will not come down until we reach a consensus with all student groups that the district represents. Great. But, you know, the kid wearing the Confederate flag hat. Now, I'm not saying that happened necessarily at Annandale, but it happens at enough of these schools where they talk about, we can't have a GLBTQ group. We gotta be inclusive. Oh, by the way, there's a guy wearing the hat symbolizing the bigot traitors to America that tried to keep black people as slaves. You know, Southern pride, right? That's what that is. Shut up. take a break, come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, I should mention as we're on this subject here, we put out the newsletter here, and this got a big thing on here with the Grand Marshal and Pride Awards going on here. The Joint Twin Cities Pride for the 50th Anniversary Grand Marshal Celebration on June 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Women's Club Minneapolis on Loring Park. It'll be celebrating the legacy and future of the Twin Cities Pride as we crown our 2022 Grand Marshals. Some of the best vocalists in the Twin Cities will rock you with 5 decades. Plus anthems. You'll be entertained by the Twin Cities music legends as well. So that's going to be going on there. TCPride.org. That's TCPride.org is where you need to go and find out more information about that. You're screwing up if, and God, I mean, you just, once again, is this more of the, well, no, you guys are a marginal group for years. We used to mock and ridicule, and now you want to have a say. Oh, the heck with that. I have zero tolerance for the bigotry that we've seen in these schools. I have zero. And I'm going to bring up what happened in the Anoka School District, where the school district was taken over by a bunch of far-right zealots whose goal was to make it legal to bully kids to death, which they did with shocking efficiency by basically making the argument, you can't stop the freedom of speech rights of the bully. You've got to allow the bully and they to stop teachers from seeing people bullied to the point of suicide, from trying to step in because you're violating the freedom of speech of the bigot. That was what they were. And when they finally lost a court case, all of a sudden, all of them were like, well, I don't want any responsibility for my actions. You're a bunch, you all of you, were horrible human people that are going to burn in hell. You will. And I say that as a Catholic. You are evil and wrong for all you did. Just horrible people for what happened up there in that school district. When kid was committing suicide after suicide after suicide because of the school-sponsored bully program you had up there. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. And so I have no tolerance at all when you have a group of kids who are sitting there and saying, you know what, we would like to have some level of safety and security and you know, a place that we don't have to worry about who we are. And here you come in and, oh, that sign doesn't look too inclusive. I mean, seriously, think about that for a second. A group of people comes to you and says, we're getting bullied, we need safe spaces. And the first thing you say is, that sign, why does that sign not represent the viewpoint of the people who are bullying you? You really are the people that are the bigots, aren't you? Now, I'm paraphrasing, but I have a hard time figuring out what the hell you guys are talking about. When you sit there and say, well, it doesn't represent poor people and it doesn't represent kids going through divorce. That is just garbage arguments. That's just, it's a freaking rainbow symbol, dude. This is about you. And the fact that you actually have kids saying, we need a safe space in this school, and the first words out of your mouth aren't, sweet Jesus, oh my God, how did we get to this point? How can we fix this? But rather, I don't like the look of that sign. You're the problem, not the solution. The days of this bullying are over. And you just, I get it. There are some people who are like, I don't want things to be like it were in the Archie comics. By the way, I don't think there ever was that episode of the Archie comics. Or if there was, I mean, I probably wasn't in the more modern day version of it. It's probably much more inclusive, and they welcome in different people. No, maybe the whole theme of this show today should be something about it. We have to stop the people that are so terrified of women having rights and women having choice and women being in power and women not taking the crap anymore. And the LGBTQ community and the Two-Spirit community, they basically not sitting there and taking the crap of the rest of the world anymore. That they just want to be treated as equals. And these people that look at that and they are so incensed by it that they are going to do everything out there and say, well, unless your sign is more inclusive, sweet Jesus. I mean, is that what they do? It's like, it says bomb shelter on that sign, but that bomb shelter sign is not more inclusive. Really? I just don't get you people. I just don't get you people. Where did all of this hate come from? Are you just repressed? Is there some sexual issues that you need to deal with? Seek a counselor, for goodness sakes. Seek a counselor. Go talk to them. Is it something that daddy told you you had to hate people, or you've got some kind of twisted version of Christianity that tells you unless you're a bigot and you hate people that you're not a good Christian? Come on, man. You got to wake up. The days of hate are over. And I understand this is you guys doing as hard as you can to push back and say, no, we're going to keep hate in place, but we are tired of your crap. And I'm tired of your bigotry wrapped in something, well, I don't even know what's wrapped in anymore. You try to wrap it in religion, you try to wrap it in nobility and these things. All it is it's just bigotry. For God's sakes. There are kids in your school district that need help. Stop complaining about the sign and try to make the entire school an inclusive zone. Maybe that's your first step right there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. When we come on back, Senator Ann Rest is going to join us, Democrat of the day. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Joining us right now is Democrat of the day, Senator Ann Rest, is a Senate District 45, soon to be 43. She's kind enough to join us today.
43.
Yeah, going to be 43. She's kind enough today to join us to talk about the last session and things coming up there. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Sure.
All right.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you and to talk with you.
Oh, it is absolutely a pleasure to chat with you as well. I mean, you've been over in the Senate there for the seventh term, right? You've been there for a while.
I've been there since 2001. Yes,
and you were in the House before that since 1984.
That's right. I've seen it all.
Well, I mean, it that doesn't surprise me. And when I was looking at your committees that you're the ranking minority member on the taxes committee there. And that is one of those committees that you do definitely want to have the people that have been there a long time on board with there. Let's start there. When you went through this last session, what were some of the things? How do you feel things went there in the Senate with the Republicans in charge?
Well, I think in the tax bill, that there was actually a lot of give and take. The Republicans wanted 100% forgiveness of taxes on Social Security, and they wanted a rate cut on the lowest income folks, which both of those would also benefit wealthy Minnesotans. But then the House had a really great program on helping out renters. And I thought at the end that it was a good balance. And of course, we finished our bill and could have gotten it passed if we could have gotten it to the floor. Everything was agreed on. But then, of course, the session ended abruptly at midnight.
Yeah. Do you think there was one of the things I've said about the tax bill is that The Republicans, the question for Republicans, and I deal looking at them on the political side of things, is it more beneficial for them to try to pass this bill, or is it more beneficial for them to not pass this bill and then use that as a campaign talking point? Do you feel as if, I mean, was it really just tied up, or could they have gotten that passed? Do you think they could have gotten to the floor and gotten a vote on it?
I think we could have done that. I think it is a real mistake in political judgment to think that the taxpayers in Minnesota wanted us to play political games with their tax relief. I don't think anybody benefits by leaving those tax relief dollars out there and for all kinds of taxpayers and children and parents and child care and for child care. Nobody benefits from that. And we might not have as good a situation as we have now next January, and the opportunity will be lost. And I don't think it matters who's in the majority. We'll all be losers. And I think I don't think the Minnesota public should put up with that. I really don't.
When the Republicans introduced that bill, we actually had some analysis come on the air, and they said, oh, yeah, this is actually a really nice bill for wealthy Minnesotans. You're seeing this on the national level with Republicans, but now we're seeing it here as well on the statewide level. There seems to be much less of a worry about saying we're going to not really give the middle and lower class tax breaks. We're going to basically, in many cases, increase their taxes, especially if they're cutting social safety programs and stuff, the other social programs that the public needs. And in turn,
very good point.
And they're going to, in turn, basically have major tax breaks for the wealthy. It really does. When we looked at the analysis of that Republican bill, there was a lot of top-loaded stuff there that it was a pretty much another big tax handout to the wealthy.
And so why in the world would they want to hold off on bringing it back? I mean, the governor signed off on it. The leaders signed off on it. Hoping for, balance in some of the other bills, like public safety and health and human services and including transit in the transportation bill, which of course the Republicans were very much opposed to, because they think that all the money, even from the new tax revenue, should go to roads and bridges. But of course, roads and bridges is only part of the story in the metropolitan area, and I think they were foolish in not grabbing at the chance for a special session to get their tax bill done. I mean, there are provisions in there for renters in particular that the House pushed that would. Particularly because people right now are experiencing evictions because they don't have the money to pay their rent. So any kind of renter's help would have been championed by the Democrats, I believe. And you're absolutely right. The Republicans would have been bigger winners. But so why do they say no? What possibly more do they think they could get next year? Because I am 90% sure that our governor as of next November is going to be Tim Walz. It's not going to be that other guy.
No. Well, the thing is just funny, Senator, as you say that, is like, I think they are trying to take a gamble here, but A, I've seen the train wreck, which is their party right now. I've seen the train wreck, which is their candidates now, and I've taken a good long look at that redistricting map, and especially when it comes to the Senate, it's become a lot harder for the Republicans to win that Senate. And as a matter, I mean, we don't take any races for granted. We fight in every district.
Of course.
That's what you do. But there are more blue-leaning districts now than there were red-leaning districts. And so they need to pull some upsets to get the majority. I think this was just a bad game plan. Like I said, I think maybe this was an attempt to create a political talking point. because you're right. This is, I mean, if the Democrats, DFL takes over the governor's house, the governor's mansion, the house and the Senate, well, the tax bill's going to look a lot.
Yeah,
the
tax bill's game over. It's gonna, yeah.
Although it will be, let's be honest, Senator, it will be very interesting to hear Jeremy Miller scream about how we need to have a special session between the election and the new Senate takes over to pass that tax bill.
Oh, right. And I wonder how deaf the ears will be on that plea.
Exactly. Senator Ann Rest joining us, Democrat of the day. No, you bring up a lot of interesting points as well in regards to just the way they negotiate. And the tax bill itself has become kind of, you know, this is, I like what Speaker Hortman does in the House. And she says the tax bill gets the last vote because we know you want that tax bill. And it's still, though, it's kind of one of those things where you look at what the education bill was. I mean, it was garbage. It was an absolute garbage Senate education bill. There was no funding for education. There just seemed to be a disingenuous level of negotiation from the get-go on certain things when it came to the Republicans in the Senate.
Well, I think they're just tone deaf with regard to the needs of Minnesota's children in our schools after all they've gone through. And now at the end of the school year, it's children all over the country that are asking about Uvalde, Texas. Mm-hmm. And why does somebody kill 10-year-olds? And do I have to go to school anymore? That's happening. Those kinds of questions and that kind of uncertainty is happening everywhere. And Minnesota is not exempt from those kinds of questions and from our children. And the education bill in the Senate, it had a good program in it, but it had this one little paltry program in it for literacy when there are so many other needs that could have been answered as well. Not instead of, but as well. And they chose to ignore those. And it's just unconscionable.
You've been there a long time, and it has really become somewhat disturbing the way that the Republicans, when they're in leadership, whether that was when Kurt Dowd was the Speaker in the House or as we are currently with the Senate, it is really disturbing what the Republicans feel is if the body operates, is that if they've got a one-seat majority, that it's their laws, their way, you sit down, you shut up. Can you talk at all about this, the disrespect as a long-serving senator? You've served your district in many years as a House member, as a senator. You've been there for a long time. Can you talk at all a little bit about the level of disrespect that you guys receive from the Republican majority?
Well, it is very disquieting because many of us have very good personal relationships with members across the aisle, but institutionally, the Republicans in these last few years have just refused to hear a number of ideas and bills coming from Democrats. And in some committees, they don't hear any Democratic bills at all. And it just doesn't make any sense that the only people who have ideas worth listening to are on the Republican side of the aisle. And that's kind of an institutional respect rather than a one-on-one respect.
Mm-hmm.
And it varies from committee to committee, by the way, and by personality to personality. But institutionally, that level of disrespect is very real.
And it's not just the disrespect for the DFL. It's also a disrespect for the people of Minnesota because, once again, they don't have a lot of public hearings on anything. And they like to do a lot of their stuff behind closed doors. And I think that's not how government's supposed to work. They talk about transparency and things there, but they themselves are the masters of hiding and throwing a bill out at the 11th hour and saying, we got to vote on this now with you having 10 minutes to review it.
Well, I think you're really correct on that, and we do. That's part of maybe every session, but it's gotten so much worse in the last few years with the Republicans in charge that institutionally, they seem to have no interest in ideas other than their own, or letting ideas that are different from their own get an airing in the public. And that's particularly true with public safety issues. And that's and gun issues and gun safety issues. And that's really disappointing. And as far as I'm concerned, the people of Minnesota ought to let them know that when they go to the ballot box.
Your district, it didn't change much. It did change its number. You lost a little bit in kind of, I think it's the northwest side of the district, but you pick up some. It's basically, it's Golden Valley, Robbinsdale, Crystal, New Hope, and a little bit of Plymouth. Is that correct?
And a little bit of Plymouth. That's exactly right. It's what we gained all of Golden Valley, and then changed a little bit of Plymouth that we had. But what was really mystifying, quite frankly, on Tuesday when the filings closed, is that for the first time that I can ever remember, and I have lived in New Hope for years and years and years, there are no Republican opponents, either for our House members, Representatives Freiberg and Frazier, and for me. I have a legal marijuana party candidate, but the Republican Party was totally absent in filing candidates to run in a suburban district where they have routinely polled at least 40% or 45% of the vote, and I can't believe that they just took their marbles and went home and just ignored the whole election.
Well, I think we can make an official call on 43 at this point. It's a little early for November, but I think I'm ready to make that call on that race.
Well, thanks.
Congratulations, Senator. But, all right, I make that joke aside, but this is what we've seen. I was Jim Rhodes. Jim Rhodes used to be my House rep. He was a Republican in Hopkins, St.
Oh,
Louis,
yeah,
Park.
Right.
And Steve, that's Simon, right, was then my House rep. He came in after that, and of course, he was fantastic and stuff. But Republicans used to run here. I see it in my district. I'm down with Cheryl Uakim and Ron Latz. I see it in my,
sure,
district, too. They
neither one of them, neither one, Cheryl nor Senator Latz, neither one of them have a Republican opponent either.
Yeah, and only
they have no opponent.
15 years ago, some of these seats actually had Republicans in them. They have what they're,
absolutely,
doing is they're taking every dime they've got, and they're looking at, you know, they're looking at Stillwater, they're looking at, you know, Maple Grove, they're looking at the North Metro, they're looking at Lake Minnetonka. They are basically picking and choosing, and they're going to throw every dollar in there because they've got to start, as I mentioned kind of earlier, they've got to pull off some upsets in districts which now lean blue for them to maintain the majority. And I don't know where they're going to do it, but that's clearly what it is. And the downside is we have a large swath of the metro area where there isn't a Republican running.
And you know, the people of Minnesota should be disappointed in that.
Yes.
That there can't, there needs to be every election, there needs to be that conversation about goals, that conversation about values. And if the other guys don't show up, there's no conversation. And people, I think people have a right to be very, very disappointed in the Republicans for not putting up candidates all over the metro area. And of course, people say, well, you know, you got off easy. You don't have an opponent, or you don't have a serious one, or a minor party candidate. But that's not the way that democracy thrives. It just is not. It is. It has to be a conversation of ideas and of values and of goals, and what we really want and how we're going to achieve it for our constituents and for the rest of the people in Minnesota. And when there's no one to talk with or to argue with or debate, then the public loses.
Absolutely. And it all it does, too, is create dead zones where Republicans do not care. I brought this point up, and we're running out of time, but I brought up this point. Back in 2009, a tornado hit Minneapolis, hit the electric fetus on the south side of town, went over the downtown, and plowed into North Minneapolis. And Republicans refused to give North Minneapolis tornado aid. Now, those same Republicans, yeah, there are still Republicans from that time in that house in St. Paul right now. They've already made call. We need help. This is the problem, is that it should not come down to large swaths of the state where one half of the political parties in the state that represent us ignore them and don't care about those areas. But that's what's happening. And that's a disservice to all of us.
It certainly is. You're absolutely right.
Ann Rest is the senator from 45. She's soon going to be Senate District 43. You don't really have a major competition here, but obviously if people want to find out more about you, find out about your campaign, maybe help you with some signs or anything like that, what's the website they should head to?
It's AnnRest for the number four, four men, .com.
AnnRest, the number four, MN.com. And there you go. We'll link to everything a little bit later on. Senator, great work there in the Senate. Let's hopefully get you a majority here, and let's see what we really can get done in this state. I hope all the best for you as we get ready for the next session.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure. Senator Ann Rest, kind enough to join us. Senate District 45, soon to be 43. We'll take a break, wrap up the show when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Senator Rest is 1,000% correct. And I know you're saying to yourself, Matt, are you saying there should be Republicans? Damn right there should be. All right. I understand. There are districts in this state where the DFL's got very little chance at winning. But I want the DFL to run candidates in that district because we should never give up on a part of the state. And they should offer them help and assistance and give them the effort. And the reason why is the exact thing I brought up, the tornado. We just had tornadoes over Memorial Day weekend come through the state and absolutely smack and destroy some areas which will not vote DFL. And I do not want to ever be such a cold, heartless bastard that I sit here and I say, don't send them any tornado relief. They need to pull themselves up by their own boot. Straps, just like the Republicans said when a tornado hit Minneapolis in 2009. And the reason why the Republicans did not care is because that's a nowhere zone. That's a no-go zone. They don't even run candidates in Minneapolis. They don't. They've given up on that area, and now they're giving up on a good chunk of the first ring suburbs. Because their message is so toxic in these communities that it's not about inclusion. It's not about what's best for everyone. It's about basically a very Donald Trump pro-wealthy tax person, pro kind of semi-bigotry racism white guy that feels like he's been wronged all the time. And that's the narrative that they're trying to grab. And no, it doesn't fly. In areas where we see actual discrimination and actual wrongs, where we want to make them better. And it's getting to a point where how much longer before the second tier suburbs are completely abandoned, and all the Republicans are trying to do is win one or two suburban ones and hope that that's enough for them to have some relevance. No, it does us no good if we have two political parties if one of them just quits. Because you're ignoring part of Minnesota at that time, and that's the Republican Party. Native Roots Radio is up next. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.